And now, from the world's leading maritime and offshore news website, gcaptain.com, comes the talk show for maritime professionals and enthusiasts, bringing you the latest news, discussion, and interviews with the industry's movers and shakers. This is G Captain Radio with your hosts, Jeff Eccles and Captain John Conrad.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of G Captain Radio. My name is Jeff Eccles and in the studio with me is John Conrad. Welcome, John. How are you today?
Doing great.
Now, you've got a bit of a sniffle. I've got a bit of a sniffle. So if we sound nasally, listeners, it's because the cold is going around here in town. This broadcast is for the week of February 24th. Listeners, this is the place we bring you the latest news and happenings in the maritime and offshore industry. Today, we have a couple of interesting topics to discuss. First off, and there's never any shortage of these during the wintertime. There's a big storm out there that's been wreaking some havoc. Get a little update from John on that. And then we're going to talk about private security on board ships. There was an unfortunate incident that occurred. We'll take a look at what happened and just have a general discussion on how to keep ships safe out at sea. So, John, let's start off with this storm. I haven't been following the news lately because I've been knee-deep into economic stuff, so I can tell you about the Fed meeting last week, but I can't tell you about what's going on out on the deep blue ocean. What do we have in storm action recently?
We had a large storm hit the United States East Coast, and those storms tend to travel from west to east. Not sure if it's the exact same storm, but Bay of Biscay, I said Biscay, that's not correct. Biscay, which is just west of France. There was a major low pressure system with hurricane force winds, and a few ships got caught in the storm, including one Maersk ship. The Svendborg Maersk lost 520 containers the deck of the ship.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yes. This goes into, you know, these ships are getting larger and larger. This was not an E-class or triple E, the two largest classes of vessels, the Maersk ships. But still a large ship with a lot of containers on deck. And when they hit a storm like this, it can translate into a large cargo loss very quickly. Now, this is surprising because Maersk is one that has some of the best weather routing systems. So the best way to avoid this type of loss is to avoid the storm. Maersk does an excellent job. You should see their kind of emergency and weather routing command center. It looks like a command center. It looks like something out of NASA with the big screen TVs up and rows of desks with experienced weathermen and ship's captains and operations people, all coordinating the global movements of the Maersk ships.
And where is that located, do you know?
I believe it's in Copenhagen.
Okay.
I know the headquarters of Maersk is in Copenhagen. And they do an excellent job, have some of the best marine weather forecasters on staff. And they do a particularly good job in the open ocean, routing ships around storms that are just in the middle of the Atlantic. Problem is here, this ship was going from somewhere in Northern Europe, probably Hamburg, but I'm not sure. And then it was going to go through the Suez Canal. So it's hugging the coast all the way down and then through the Mediterranean. Well, this is an issue of not enough sea room. When the entire left port side of the ship is coastline, you don't have that many options to route around the storm. So that really limits even the best weather routers' ability to route a ship when half of your options are land, where ships obviously can't sail. So this is, and weather still is unpredictable. You know, the first supercomputer ever built, I think the first one was used for the census, but government, they had a big consortium of government heads. And the thing the U.S. government was most excited about after this first census supercomputer was built was weather forecasting. They really thought that you put in all the inputs, and if you got enough good inputs of solid weather forecasting, that this would translate into really accurate predictions. And we have gotten very accurate, but it's still not perfect. There's still an element of chance.
Well, and of course, there's the old joke that never gets old. I've said it before, but I'll say it again. You know why God put weathermen on the earth?
Why is that?
To make economists look good with our predictions.
But it's not all the weathermen's fault, especially in California, because they get most of their information from ships.
Right.
The ships, NOAA has the VOS, Voluntary Observation System. They provide calibrated barometers and forms and computer systems in order for ships to give weather reports from the middle of the ocean. And that's how we get our weather reports in California, because there can't be a weather station a few hundred miles off coast. So this is all data provided by many of our listeners on board ships.
So now you mentioned a very important point, that probably the best way to handle significant weather is just to avoid it in the first place,
yes.
Correct?
Okay. The only safe way.
So in this case, though, they got stuck in this storm, and the number of containers that was lost was extremely significant, because I'm taking a peek at the article here, and it was over 500 containers that were lost. Is that
yes.
correct? And annually, they report that about 350 are lost.
Yes, so this is really jumping up their statistics, and that's the problem with these larger ships. If this was a Triple E, we might have seen three or four times this number of containers lost from the deck of the ship. These ships are really putting all your eggs in one basket.
Now, you may not know the intricacies of the commerce with this, but I'm going to ask the questions to see if you do. Insurance. If I own the contents of one of those containers, if I'm shipping across bottles of wine or desks or something, do you know, am I covered? Is the shipping line going to cover me, or would it be incumbent upon me as a commerce guy to insure my cargo?
You have to insure the cargo yourself. I am not a marine insurance specialist, are you responsible for the cargo? You could be responsible for some of the ship under force majeure. The cargo insurers all get together and they provide some of the replacement cost of the ship. And if you don't have insurance, you're not getting anything. Jeffrey Weiss is the head of graduate studies at SUNY Maritime College, where I went to school. One of the absolute best professors I ever seen. And he said he used to work as a marine insurance lawyer. He said once every month or two, someone would walk into his office and say, I had 30 containers on this ship and they were lost. I need you to sue the shipping company. And he says, but you're at the wrong office. You need to talk to your insurance. Well, I didn't have any insurance, so I want to sue the shipping company. And he said, that's not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
He said it's very hard for you either have insurance or you don't, but whoever's container, whoever's cargo has to buy insurance for that voyage.
Interesting. Now, how about culpability of the captain? Because there could be an instance where there's a judgment call. If there's some weather out there and the captain decides that he's going to go through the weather and it turns out to be worse than expected, or maybe just something happened that the captain didn't expect in terms of losing cargo. Is there any argument to be made for the culpability of the decisions that the captain made?
Less nowadays. So you go back 100 years, one of my favorite books, Typhoon by Joseph Conrad. It's all about this very question. They don't have an accurate weather charts because it was before weather faxes and all the information we have now to route around weather. But they had the old-time weather forecasting, the barometer, the change in wind, to see when a hurricane, or this was in the Pacific, so it was called the typhoon, was coming. And the captain watched the barometer drop, and he had a decision. Do we avoid the storm, or do we go through? How bad is the storm? He didn't know. He didn't have the information. And the quote in the book that he gives the chief mate, he goes, if we avoid the storm and we come into port a week late with absolutely no damage, they're going to say, was there really a storm out there? But if we go through and we have damage, no one's going to blame us.
Mm-hmm.
So I went through this storm, and it was a mega storm that really broke up. Excellent book. You should read it. Nowadays, though, everything's connected. So, like I said, there's this command center at MERS headquarters, and they're going to be advising the captain.
And I wanted to ask about that, too. When you say advising the captain, do you know if those decisions sometimes are made on land as opposed to out at sea by the captain? In other words, at the command center, are you aware if anyone has the authority there at the shipping company to radio out or call out to the ship and say, come back to the docks?
They have the authority, but the captain also has the override authority. He can say, no, I'm not going. It's unsafe. So that's the only case where the captain would be held culpable and likely fired by the company if they strongly advised him to take one action and he refused to do that. That happens very rarely. Sometimes it happens very extremely rarely with companies as good as Maersk that really have these resources. I have heard it happen. I've experienced it happen with less marine-centric companies that maybe don't have the best weather forecasters, where the weather forecaster says, it's okay, get close to the storm. The storm's not that bad. And then the captain stands back and says, you know, the captain usually, I mean, he's on the ship. He doesn't, storms are uncomfortable. You get knocked around, tossed around. No one wants to be in a storm.
Right.
He wants to go further away from the storm usually than the company's advising. So it has happened, but very rare. The captain's usually, you know, errs on the side of safety.
Of course, there's also this balance and tug and pull between the risk of going through some weather versus the ship sitting at the dock. And when, from an economic standpoint, when the ship is sitting on the dock, nobody's making any money.
Yes, and container ships are scheduled extremely. I mean, the great thing about working a container ship, the bad part is you have no port time.
Right.
Huge container ship can be loaded in 24 hours.
Yeah.
But the advantage is you know exactly when you're getting off, what ports you're going to. They have a schedule that extends out 6 months, and they know exactly where the ship's going to be at this hour of this day, and they meet that schedule. And they do that because the shippers are now using just-in-time inventory. So places like, you know, the predecessor to Walmart, stores and factories used to have these huge warehouses where they had to store all this equipment and supplies. And those warehouses are expensive. They have to be guarded. They have to be secured. They just having all that money and inventory sitting on a shelf doing nothing for months is expensive. You know more about it than I do. But now what they do is, because these container ships are so scheduled, Walmart doesn't have warehouses.
Right.
They order directly from China and predict the buying patterns and the needs with new computer systems. So when you buy that couch at Walmart, that might have just showed up on the dock a few days ago.
Right.
And it's just in time shipping. But the problem is any delay, and not only Walmart, but factories as well. So General Motors factory in Detroit, it's building a car. Well, there may be steel bearings that are needed for a minor part, but those steel bearings aren't in a, you know, it used to be GM had huge warehouses. There were thousands of millions of steel bearings that they could grab off the shelf. Now those warehouses don't exist. If those container ships don't arrive on time, the whole production line is going to grind to a halt. And those pressures from the shippers, from the factories and the stores all get pushed on companies like Maersk and say, well, we need these supplies. We need them now, or our operations grind to a halt.
So there's economic incentive then to take really additional risk to make sure that that schedule is kept up.
Yes. Yeah. But there's also the fact that if the containers don't arrive, there are bigger problems.
So, right. Right.
You know, there is some leeway built into the system.
Yeah. Interesting. Very good. Well, good topic. We're going to take a break in a moment to hear from our sponsor. Any final comments, John, with regard to the storm and this loss of containers? Oh, I did have one question. So when these containers fall off, obviously there's a big risk. Do you know if they sink, they float? I would think they would bob around at least for a while.
Oh, this is a big question. Lost at Sea, excellent movie. And we got an exclusive sponsorship with G-Captain. Hollywood paid us to help promote the movie, which I wanted to do anyway because it was a great movie. But this guy's alone in a sailboat, and there's a half-submerged container filled with shoes, I think. It's Robert Redford, and he hits into it, and his boat starts sinking. And it's his whole survival of this boat in a storm. Excellent movie, but Some of the containers, it depends what's in them. Some of them sink. Some of them float just below the surface, and some of them float with a couple feet of freeboard. They say the majority of these containers, the good thing about this is MERS tracks every container. Every container has a serial number. They know exactly where it's placed. So they know exactly what was lost. Majority of them were empty. None of them contained hazardous cargo, but the empty containers will float longer, and it is a navigational hazard for shipping. So if you're in the Bay of Biscay area, I hope you have a good lookout and are looking out for these containers.
Interesting. I was just thinking in my mind, so if there was a container full of styrofoam cups, it would probably float pretty well.
Yes, and the ducks. Did you hear of the ducks that are showing up?
The ducks?
There was a container of rubber ducks.
Oh, rubber duckies?
Mm-hmm. Tubs. And there's a website, I forget the name, we'll try to link to it, but the container was lost and broke open, and these ducks scattered, and now they're being found, they've been found in every continent in the world, they're following currents, and the scientists are using it. If you find this rubber duck on the beach, there's a website, you can tell them about it, and they're using it to track, they've tracked all of the ocean currents by this spray of these ducks, which are floating out in mid-ocean right now.
Boy, that's great. That's that was an accident, obviously, but if that was thought up, that could have been a genius marketing ploy.
Sure.
Okay, final thoughts before we take a break on storms.
You know, the best technology, the best computer system, weather routing, which Merskall has, doesn't stop the fact that elements of this business are unpredictable and dangerous.
Yep. Yep. At the end of the day, we're still just sailors, aren't we?
Yes.
Bobbing around on the ocean.
Yes.
All right. Very good. Listeners, stay with us. We're just going to hear a quick word from our sponsor, Six Maritime.
Six Maritime is a leading provider of professional security services for the maritime industry. Using state-of-the-art military and industry practices, Six Maritime provides clients with tailor-made, cost-effective solutions that ensure both safety and security in every environment. Six Maritime specializes in the use of early threat detection technology for both mobile and immobile clients, giving them increased warning time to any threat. Avoid the violence, deter attackers, keep your crew and cargo safe. Leading the next generation of security, logistically simple, technologically advanced. Six Maritime. To learn more, visit sixmaritime.com.
Thanks for staying with us, and thank you, Six Maritime, for sponsoring this show. And this issue that we're going to talk about right now, John, kind of blends in with what Six Maritime does. There was an unfortunate incident where I believe were there some security contractors that were actually killed or went missing out at sea lately?
Yes, we don't know why. They were on the famous Maersk Alabama, which was Captain Phillips' ship, protecting the Maersk Alabama. And it's Maersk Limited, which is the United States-based arm of Maersk. So it's, I don't know if it's a subsidiary per se, but it's not based out of the Copenhagen office. It's based out of United States office. And two security contractors from the trading group were found dead aboard the ship. A lot of rumors floating around out there about why they died. We don't know specifically what happened, so I don't want to jump into those rumors. But there's still the big question of integration with crew. I've worked with security guys. They've been hired onto my ships before. And they are not mariners, and us mariners are not security guys. And I think that's one of the big issues with security guys is how well are they integrated with the crew? Everyone on the ship has to be on the same page, you know, the emergency drills, have accountability, and follow company policies. And are security guys really integrated with the crew? One of the ways I could tell jumping around ships, one odd thing that I found was, you know, there are ships that completely ignore the galley crew. And then there are ships that fully integrate with the galley crew. Mm-hmm. And you can tell because guys are allowed to kind of go back in the kitchen and grab food and the galley doesn't mind. But also, the biggest indicator is who's at the emergency drills. So especially on larger crew vessels like drill ships, are the galley guys excused? It's real easy to excuse them. Oh, we're having, because Sunday is drill day, and it's usually fried chicken day on the drill ships. They got to put out a big meal for everyone to eat, all the fixings. And the galley crew is often excused, oh, you don't have to do drill because you are cooking this big food. But a lot of times, talking with the galley crew, they want to be on, they don't want to die in a fire. They want, and they, more than that, they want to be helpful in an emergency. And a lot of the best ships invite the galley crew, integrate the steward, give him an important job during an emergency, integrate them with all the training and the meetings, and really make them a part of the emergency response. There are always some, so if, most particularly if there's a galley fire, a lot of the fires start in the areas where the kitchen crew, it's galley fire or a laundry fire.
Yeah, makes sense.
Two most common.
Some
ships, the bad ships kind of say, okay, step aside, galley crew. Now we got the fire team here. We're going to put out the fire. You guys go to your lifeboats. But the best crews train the galley crews to put out those fires themselves, to deal with it, get the hoses and the boundary coolant and everything set up in place before the crews come on. Now, the odd thing that I've noticed is the food on the ships where the galley crew is integrated with the emergency drills, and they're invited up onto the bridge and they're brought into some of the operational level meetings, the food on those ships are the best because the guys really care. They feel part of a team. They feel like they're doing something more than just cooking the food,
right?
Which is in itself one of the most important things on a ship.
Well, I remember that there were two things you didn't mess with us as sailors. One was the food, and the other was the paycheck. And you had to have those two things there. If either of those things lacked, you had a very unhappy crew.
So I've seen the best ships run where everyone's one crew, and on the important things like emergencies, everyone participates in an equal level. Security teams are difficult because at least a galley guy, he may not be trained in the and marine firefighting. He's taken basic STCW, but he's not the Marine. He doesn't have time in the bridge or the engine room. So it's easy for him not to, but at least he's been on the ship and hearing the conversation and has the lingo and the jargon. You know, maybe for 20 years he's been cooking on the ship. He's essentially a mariner. He's collected all this information, the stories and the lessons learned over the years just working on board the ship. Where a security guy was a Marine or Navy SEAL or worked for the Army and may not have, or even if he was a Navy guy, Navy surface warfare person, they run their ships a lot different from merchant ships. Yeah. So they don't have this background of experience. So it's a lot harder, even if you want to integrate them with the emergency drills and the navigation of the ship and some of this operational stuff.
And it sounds like you're saying that this, that when it comes to a ship's security, then the entire crew should be integrated. There should be shared responsibility and especially integration so that everyone feels a part of
yes.
the security of the ship.
In both ways. One of the reasons security companies are there is because the ship owners are reluctant to give guns to the crew.
Right.
But if not, the crew should be allowed to shoot the guns that security guys bring on. They should cross-train. The security guys should teach them how to shoot guns. And I understand a lot of ship owners will say, no, no way, absolutely not. But even short of shooting the weapons out in the open ocean and testing them, they should be trained. And this is a Glock 9mm. This is an AR-15. These are the type of guns. This is how you clean it. This is how you operate it. And a lot of the crews want to do this. I mean, their guns, their advanced radio equipment, the crews want to do this. But a lot of times security guys go, no, no,
right.
I've been told not to show you this.
That's what I was just thinking, is that they probably don't want to overstep their boundaries, they being the security personnel on board the vessel, because if they haven't been instructed to do so, which brings up the question, and it would be interesting to ask someone at Trident or Six Maritime about this, in terms of training the crew on board, do you feel that should be, and integrating the crew with security personnel. Do you think that should be the responsibility of the ship owner, or should that be something that the ship owner hires the security company to do? In other words, that could be a component of their services of somebody like Six Maritime or Trident.
I don't know about Trident, but that's one of the major selling points of Six Maritime is they do integrate with the crew. They work closely with the crew under the ship owner's guidelines. The ship owner policy may be, okay, our crew members are not allowed to shoot guns. They're not allowed to do this, that, or the other thing, be in dangerous areas. But short of that, Six Maritime really integrates with the crew, gets to know the captain, and know how ships operate so they can be helpful. Because let's say there's a fire on a ship, there are only 20 to 25 guys on board a ship. You need every hand available. The man hoses back. It may not be entering fires, but just man the nozzle, be standing by a nozzle. And those security guys can help with that too. On the same note, no one knows the ship better than the crew. The crew may not be up firing guns, but they can be going around making sure the doors are locked and properly secured. And so there has to be some basic integration for emergencies, but it gets to a deeper level than this. Because if you're not working together on a daily basis, if you're not at the same meetings, eating at the same table, a lot of these third-party contractors, I'd see them on the ship. You know, they come and on the drill ships, we'd have one galley. It wouldn't be officers and crew mess. But a lot of the third party, they go in a small group and eat at their own table away from everyone else. We didn't know who they were or what they were. But it's hard to get those guys. I'd always try to bring them into the conversation because then they learn our policies. They learn through integration. They learn what they should be doing and not doing. There's certain things on a drill ship you do not want to touch, certain areas you do not want to go into. And I saw on those drill ships where those times when those third parties would be eating by themselves, completely separate from the crew, didn't really come up for drills, tried to get excused. They'd make all these other do dangerous things that weren't emergency related, like going into restricted areas, playing around with equipment they weren't supposed to, just not following our basic safety policies. But when you integrate them with the crew, when you encourage them to come to the safety meetings, when you're sitting down with dinner, sharing stories with them, they learn the policies, and one crew, the whole crew's got to be on the same page.
And it sounds like that's a decision that should be made really before the hired security personnel sets foot on board the vessel. I mean, that to me seems like a managerial decision that should be made between the vessel operator and the managers at the security company. And it shouldn't be left up to the captain of the vessel and the security personnel at the time that they meet to have to figure out a way to integrate. Is that fair to say?
Yes. Unfortunately, very few. I don't know of any security companies that put such emphasis as Six Maritime. Most don't integrate with the crew. So I don't know that it really exists. When it doesn't exist, it's up to the captain to make it do as much possible. But that should be the Marine manager, the Marine superintendent, whoever's hiring the security, the company security officer, whoever's hiring the security team. That's one of the first questions they should ask when they're interviewing the company for a job. What do you do to integrate with the crew, to integrate with our policies? And that's the security company's job, to really read all the manuals, interview the crew, talk to them, find out. Every ship has different policies, different procedures. It's the security company's job to integrate with those policies.
Yeah, I agree. And just as an outside observer, I would think it would be imperative that that's a discussion that should be had long before anybody sits on board the vessel.
Yeah, right when you hire these companies.
Yeah, excellent. Now, going back to the story, there aren't many details, so we won't delve into the story too deeply, but we do know that they were believed to be former Navy SEALs, and this didn't happen under any combat situation. They weren't under attack or anything that we know of. They were found dead in their room, apparently.
Yes.
So, okay. So we'll keep an eye out for that. And of course, we'll put updates on G-Captain. And time flies when you're having fun, John. We're about out of our time here for today already. So interesting conversation of onboard security. We could go on and on. I kind of wanted to talk a little bit more about guns on board a vessel, but I think that discussion would draw too long for today's show.
Next week.
So any other thoughts with regard to private security onboard vessels, even maybe ships supplying their own in-house security? What are your closing thoughts on this?
Too many to state, but that's a critical component of this. You know, how well does the security team integrate with the ship? Or are they felt welcome on the ship? And it's the superintendent's job at the interviews to ask him, how do you integrate with our policies?
Okay.
And if that doesn't happen, it's the captain's responsibility to make these guys feel welcome and home. And you've probably been, when you were on ships, you didn't always feel warm, fuzzy feeling when you walked on board the first day.
Right.
Those are the old days. The new day, now we realize when a crew member comes on, we got to give them the training and make them feel welcome, part of the crew from day one. And that's what we got to do with these security guys. Don't just let them go in the corner. You know, they got interesting equipment. Yeah, you think mariners would, a lot of times we're just afraid to ask, you know, what is that weapon? What's the safety on that weapon? How do you use it? So be a little curious too, I guess.
Very good. All right. Interesting conversation. Thank you, John. And thank you for listening. Be sure to tune in next week to keep up with what's going on in the maritime and offshore industry. On behalf of John Conrad and myself, Jeff Eccles, we look forward to speaking with you again next week. Be well and be safe.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest in maritime and offshore news. G-Captain Radio is a production of GCaptain.com and is recorded weekly in Morro Bay, California. For more information or to be a guest on the show, visit GCaptain.com.